The next case on our calendar today is A18-2006, State v. James Robert Bazov. Did I pronounce that correctly?
You did, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you. Appellant will have 15 minutes for appellant's argument, followed by 15 minutes for respondent, and then 5 minutes of rebuttal. And if you can introduce yourselves when you start your argument, we would appreciate that. Appellant can proceed whenever you're ready.
Good morning. May it please the court. I am Sarah Martin. I represent the appellant, James Bazov. Mr. Bazov was convicted following a jury trial of failing to register an address as his primary residence and failing to register that same address as a secondary address. Mr. Bazov argues on appeal that the verdicts were legally inconsistent and that the evidence was insufficient to convict him. I'd like to address the inconsistent verdict issue today. The verdicts were legally inconsistent because one address cannot simultaneously be a primary address and a secondary address. Mr. Bazov was living in an apartment in Wheaton, Minnesota in August of 2016, and he was in the process of purchasing his sister's home, which was also in Wheaton. The home had been a previous primary address and was his current work address. The state believed that Mr. Bazov moved out of the apartment and into the home before he completed the required change of information form. The state charged Mr. Bazov with 2 counts, failure to register his new home as a primary address and failure to register his new home as a secondary address. The state, in closing argument, made clear that these were alternative theories. It argued that Mr. Bazov was guilty of failing to register the new home as his primary residence before he moved in. But if the jury did not believe it had proved that, he was at least spending enough time there to require registration as a secondary address. The state closed its closing argument by asking the jury to find Mr. Bazov guilty of count one or count two.
But you're arguing that the verdicts are legally inconsistent, not logically inconsistent, correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
And so while I agree with your summary or description of the definitions, isn't it possible to have location be a secondary address at one point in time and a primary address at a later point in time?
It is definitely possible to have an address be a primary at one point in time and a secondary at a different point in time. But that's not what the verdicts reflect here. The verdicts reflect that from August 1st to August 18th, the home was a primary residence.
But isn't that really a logically inconsistent argument, not a legally inconsistent argument? Because for a verdict to be legally inconsistent, proof of the elements of one offense negate the necessary elements of another offense.
That's correct, Your Honor. The reason that they are legally inconsistent in this case is because a necessary element does conflict with another, affirmatively conflicts with another. A primary address is defined as a mailing address of a person's dwelling. A secondary address is defined as a mailing address of any place where the person regularly or occasionally stays overnight when not staying at the person's primary address. So a secondary address is defined as something other than a primary address. So something cannot simultaneously be a primary and a secondary address.
But if you look at Exhibit 4, which is the change of address information form that Mr. Beza filled out, if you take that document at face value, it's legally consistent that he could have had his primary address be the house prior to August 18th, and then, that his secondary address was the house prior to August 18th, and then on August 18th, his primary address became the house.
Because
under this form, he indicates that his primary address is the First Avenue address, which is the house, correct?
That's correct, yes.
And he indicates, he signed the form on the 18th, and he indicates that On that same day, the 305 12th Street North address became a secondary address, and that's the apartment, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
So as of August 18th, he's indicating his primary address is the house.
That's correct.
And so isn't it possible that the jury could have found that prior to that, the house was his was a secondary address because there's evidence that he had moved his bed and or that his bed wasn't in the apartment prior to August 18th, after August 5th or 6th?
It's certainly
and so in that way, can't they be legally consistent verdicts?
It is certainly possible that that is what the jury found. The problem is that we don't know that that's what the jury found.
You're arguing that they are, as a matter of fact, legally inconsistent, and this is, based on this document, they could very well be legally consistent.
What I'm arguing, Your Honor, is that based upon the charges, that they are legally inconsistent. In order to find that they are not legally inconsistent, in order to find that that Mr. Bazoff was had the house as his secondary address for a period of time and then his primary address for another period of time, there would need to be some sort of a jury finding to that fact. Right now, what we know is that the jury verdict reflects that from August 1st to 18th, the home was a primary residence, and from August 1st to 18th, the home was also a secondary residence. If this was really the state's theory that it was a primary for some part and a secondary for other parts, it could have amended the complaint to reflect that. It could have charged, for example, failure to register a secondary address from August 1st to 9th, and then failure to register the home as a primary address from the 10th to the 18th, or whatever dates the state believed it occurred. Right now, the jury verdict reflects that for an exact same period of time, it is both a primary and a secondary address, and it cannot be both. It needs to be one or the other. The other thing,
based on the language of the complaint.
Yes, Your Honor.
So if I understand, are you saying that he's being charged for his conduct before he signed that the form that's dated August 18th?
That is my understanding from reading the complaint, yes. The state alleges that from August 1st to 18th that he was in violation.
Up until he signed that.
That's correct, Your Honor. That's correct, Your Honor. Another way that the state could have addressed this issue is by having special interrogatories, for example. If the state wanted to argue alternative theories at trial or argue that it was a primary for one part and a secondary for the other part, certainly it could have had special interrogatories for the jury to determine at which dates it was a primary and which dates it was a secondary. But the state failed to do that. And the state really did seem to believe that these were alternative counts, judging by its closing argument, where it argued that the jury should find Mr. Bazoff guilty of count one or count two.
And then what was defense counsel's closing argument? Could you summarize that?
Defense counsel's closing argument that was that he was not guilty of either one.
And based on what? Did the defense counsel lay out a theory about when he moved from the apartment to the house?
The defense, yes. The defense theory was that he did not move into the house until August 25th or later, which is when he signed the contract for deed. And there was testimony from his sister that they signed the contract for deed on August 25th and that she did not want him moving in until he had some money down, and that occurred on August 25th.
And then did defense counsel comment on the form, which is exhibit four, but where he says on the second page that the 12th Street address begins as the secondary address on August 18th.
I don't recall that defense counsel specifically addressed it, other than to say that he filled out a form on the 18th, which was more than 5 days before he moved into the home.
Was it the defense theory that he initially intended to move earlier and then his move-in was delayed?
No, the defense theory was that it was his sister's home. The house was vacant. He was moving things into the home gradually over the course of several weeks. He was also doing work there to fix up the home before moving in, but that he did not actually begin residing in the home until August 25th.
I'm trying to reconcile it. My recollection is that on August, I think, 8th or 9th, he told an officer that he was planning to move tomorrow.
Yes, there was discussion about that. And that was certainly the officer's interpretation, was that he was going to be taking up residence. The question was whether he was saying he's in the process of moving or whether he was going to begin residing there. There was no specific testimony that he was going to begin living there the next day.
And did the defendant testify about, at a later date, I believe the police chief was there and looked throughout the apartment, saw no beds. Did defendant testify as to whether there was a bed there at that time? And if so, why not?
The defendant did. Yes, Mr. Bazoff did testify that there was still, I believe, a bed and a tanning bed, and that he had not moved everything out of his apartment. The officer disagreed with that. The officer, I believe, testified that there were items strewn throughout the house. He basically, he had trails through the house that he could walk through, but that it did not appear as though anyone was sleeping at that apartment.
And you would agree, under the circumstantial evidence test, we don't consider testimony that's inconsistent with the testimony of the state's witnesses in determining the circumstances proved.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Again, to the extent his testimony is inconsistent with the officer's testimony, we wouldn't consider that.
Yes,
looking at the circumstances proved.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Going back, I'm sorry, did you?
No. Okay.
Going back to your argument that the verdicts are legally inconsistent. So looking at the complaint, do you have that handy?
Yes.
The complaint has two counts, as you mentioned, and the first states between August 1, 2016 and August 18, 2016, James Robert Bazoff, who's required to register as a predatory offender, changed his primary address, and it lists the two different addresses without notifying the Minnesota Bureau of Criminal Apprehension or the Wheaton Police Department. And then count two is similar in terms of the time frame. It says between August 1 and August 2018. So you read that charge to be that during that whole time period, is that how you're reading that? That's why you're saying they're legally inconsistent?
That's correct, Your Honor. And that is what the jury found by finding Mr. Bazoff guilty. And again, if the state had believed that it was a primary for part and a secondary for the other part, it could have addressed that issue by having different dates in the complaint, by charging different dates. Or it could have addressed it by, if there was some sort of a disagreement over when Mr. Bazoff actually did move, it could have had special interrogatories.
Okay, thank you.
Was there any evidence at the trial of where mail was delivered?
I don't believe there was. The remedy for inconsistent verdicts is a new trial. Because an address cannot simultaneously be a primary and a secondary address, the verdicts were legally inconsistent and must be reversed.
Can I ask you one?
I have a question about that point. I mean, if your argument is based upon the language in the complaint,
mm-hmm.
Could a new trial? It seems like a new trial might just lead to the exact same situation. I mean, how is that an efficacious remedy?
A new trial could address the problem by only charging one count, or by charging two counts with different dates, or by having two counts and special interrogatories.
I read the transcript, and I can't recall if it's in the I know it's in the transcript, but I can't recall if it's in the briefs. But can you point me to the prosecutor's closing argument, where that is, and the description of the alternative counts?
Yeah, I can read it for you. It's at page 190. The prosecutor says, if for some reason you think that because he left some items in his apartment, his lease was not up yet, and despite his own words and admission on Exhibit 4 that he had not changed his primary address, I think it's very clear beyond any reasonable doubt that the 506 address was at very least his secondary address. And then at the end of the argument, he says, so I believe the state has proved, met its burden of proof for counts one or count two, and asked you to come back with a verdict of guilty. That's at page 190.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
And respondent, whenever you're ready.
May it please
Welcome
the court.
Back.
Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, Matthew Francis, Traverse County attorney here on behalf of the respondent, State of Minnesota. If I could, I'll try to go through some of the questions that Your Honors have been asking defense counsel, then could I give more of a definitive response. One of Your Honors had asked, was there evidence of mail? Judge Smith, no, there was no mail. We did not have any evidence of mail of where the defendant was living. The defendant had insisted throughout the trial that he was still living at the apartment. That's part of where the exhibits, he had taken some what I perceived to be self-serving photographs after Chief Minion had confronted him about his failure to register. He went into his apartment, which he still had the key because the lease wasn't up until the end of the month, and he was insistent he was still living there. There was a tanning bed that was still in one of the rooms, and that was the big argument, was that that he was still residing there as evidenced by this tanning bed. Chief Minion said, I was there. The reason why he was at the apartment that day was investigating an alleged burglary. He said, I went into every single room, checked every single closet looking for an individual. If I saw a tanning bed there, I would have noted it, because it's, you can, in the pictures, one of the exhibits that the defendant had encountered is a very large tanning bed. So that was a part of the argument was, and we believe, again, the jury believed the state's witnesses, not the defense witnesses. And while counsel is correct, at the very end of my argument, I had made a comment about either or. The bulk of my closing argument, especially the statements I had made preceding that, made it very clear to the jury that evidence was sufficient to support convictions for both accounts. In a situation like this, where we have a defendant who, in his statements to law enforcement, that he's still residing in a certain place, and we have evidence in a given period of time that he could be living in either place, I don't believe I'm required, as a matter of law, to state specific dates or give the jury special interrogatories to say we have to narrow the dates. It's up to a jury to find out independently if they believe that the evidence supports the elements of the crime. And in this case, both of these counts had four elements, and three of the
but
four
the counts both have the same time period. So doesn't that mean that the charge for the first count is that he had a primary address during that time period, a new primary address during that time period?
Right, but we don't know when. So that's why it was left. I mean, I was the one who made the charging decision. The reason why it was that way is because we didn't know exactly when, other than exhibit number four. And that's an argument that we made. We thought that the evidence showed that he actually moved a long time before then. But because it was obviously easier to argue to a jury, he look at exhibit four, it's his own words saying that that the move-in date was the same date he signed the form. He clearly violated the statute by not notifying 5 days before the date changed, because on that exhibit four, what he should have done is noted that his move-in date was August 23rd, but he didn't. He said it was the date that he signed the form, and we believe that he had moved in based on all the other evidence and the other testimony that was there. He had actually moved in much sooner than that. One of the main witnesses for that was the neighbor across the hall, who said after he saw him one day moving a whole bunch of boxes out, he never saw him again, never heard anything coming from the apartment. The apartment's right across the hall. He's in narrow hallways. And so, and then in conjunction with the fact that the chief of police and other officers, when they were driving by his residence, saw lots of evidence that he was living there. The defendant himself testified that there was a number of domestic calls that law enforcement had to respond to, and at least half of them took place at the house. And so there really wasn't, again, aside from Exhibit 4, there wasn't a real clear evidence as to when exactly he had moved. So as I put at the end of my brief, and I agree with Your Honor, Judge Cochran, that this is an issue of maybe it might be logically inconsistent to some extent, but really a jury very easily could have found that that he's guilty of count two, failing to register the house as a secondary address from August 1st up to August 17th. because August 18th then is count one, that's the date when he's supposed to register a primary address, and he clearly did not register the primary address 5 days before he moved in, because he himself said, I'm moved, consider me moved in as of this date.
So if he moved in on August 18th, as the change of address form indicates, is your reading of the complaint is that the verdicts are consistent because he, between August 18th is between August 1st and August 18th.
Correct.
And that he had a secondary, he used the home as a secondary address prior to August 18th at some point.
Correct.
And so then that's consistent because it's between August 1st and 18th.
Yes, Your Honor. The
so, but what is the, you know, what's your response to appellant's argument that the verdicts are inconsistent because they cover the same time period?
The jury, well, again, it was, the issue was, when did the defendant actually move in? One of the arguments that I made in closing, and I think that was being adduced by all the state's witnesses at trials, that the defendant was lying. The defendant at one point had told the chief of police, I'm living in both places. So we didn't have a real clear
idea. Where is that in the record? I didn't see that in the record. I saw that in your brief, but I don't remember seeing that in the record.
On what I have in my brief was transcript pages 92 through 93 and then at page 141.
Okay, thank you.
And so, but that's just one part of it, of course. I mean, he was alleging, because of where his, he was alleging that when he testified at trial, that his girlfriend was the one who was moving in there and that they were going through a domestic and needed to be separated for a while. And so that it was, she was the one who was living there, not him. But again, every time the law enforcement saw him, he's at the house. Every time law enforcement's called out to a place, they weren't called out to the apartment. They always called out either the house or another location within the town. And again, that's by the defendant's own admission. So the state's theory is we can't trust anything the defendant says. To a degree, you can't even trust Exhibit 4, but for the fact that he signed it as of that day, so that would be, I mean, since it's signed under penalty of perjury, it's conclusive proof that his move, as a matter of law, that his move-in date was August 18th. But quite frankly, given all the things that he had been saying and testifying to, I have no idea when he actually moved in. And so I believe it's the state's able to present two separate theories to the jury. The jury is able to make a finding of fact. Again, we don't know for exactly what the how they reached the conclusion as a matter of law, because there's no record of it, but they can easily have said from the 1st through the 17th it was a secondary address based upon his own testimony that he was living at the apartment still, but based on the evidence of himself and law enforcement that he was over at this house a substantial amount of time. He was there at 9:30 at night. He was there overnight. They saw his car parked there overnight a number of times. And then his date changed of officially changed to the house on the 18th when he signed the form.
Is there any testimony about whose handwriting that is in the bottom of page 2?
No, Your Honor. I don't believe, I should say my recollection is no, I don't believe there was, Your Honor.
So you just said that you have no idea when he actually moved. Doesn't that then give rise to a number of reasonable inferences about when he actually moved?
Sometime between the 1st and the 18th. And that's up.
But on some of those dates, if he moved, okay.
That's what I'm saying, Aaron. As a matter of law, we know as a matter of law when a date was conclusively, it was a date he signed Exhibit 4. So my theory, I'm just telling you what my.
Why is it not reasonable to believe that he moved on August 23?
Why? Because he signed the form saying he moved. That was his change of address on that date. It wasn't reasonable because, hold on 1 second, Your Honor. He had said he was.
I noticed on page 1 of the form.
Yeah.
For the primary, there's nothing filled in on the begin date.
Right. I see that.
And okay.
But I mean, again, this is in front of the jury. This is what the jury found. And my, telling Your Honor that myself, I mean, I'm the prosecutor. I have obviously more information than a jury is going to have, and I'm going to have different beliefs as analyzing the facts of the case. So I don't want to try to talk myself out of good what I believe to be good convictions on both counts. I believe that the evidence submitted to the jury allowed for them to find him guilty of both counts, and that was to be consistent because they could have found from the 1st to the 17th, he had failed to register the house as a secondary address, and then as when he moved in, when he signed that form on the 18th, that's his official move-in date. Well, that clearly was not 5 days before the law requires him to have signed that form, and therefore he's guilty of that date. And that's what I argued to the jury. And I did argue, except for that one statement where I said alternative at the very end of my argument, if the court looks at the preceding paragraphs, I did say you find him guilty of both counts one and count two. I didn't say either or until the very, very end. My argument was always and still is today that he was guilty of both.
Do you agree that the circumstantial evidence standard of review applies to both convictions? Both verdicts?
Well, I guess I would have to say so because with respect to count one, no, because it's not circumstantial evidence when he signs a form under penalty of perjury saying my move-in date is August 18th, signed on August 18th, and the law says he's supposed to give 5 days notice. So I believe that's direct evidence, not circumstantial evidence.
How do you give 5 days notice on this form?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
How do you give 5 days notice on this form?
How do you give 5 days? Oh, you're supposed to, it says, Your Honor, well, excuse me. It says, if you look on page two of the form, actually page one and two, it says begin date. And so that date, if he's to move in on August 23rd, he's supposed to say my begin date is August 23rd.
Okay, but it's not filled out here.
On page one is not filled out. Page two is filled out where he says August 18th.
Oh, I see, okay.
Does the law require a 5-day notice for the secondary address?
I'm sorry, you caught me off of that one, Your Honor. I don't recall if it does or doesn't. I know that I believe the law requires, I don't believe it does. I believe the law requires you to register when you are spending a great deal of time at another residence, which he clearly was. If he was not living at the house, he clearly was there a great deal of time and not registering as he was supposed to.
Well, it's not just a great deal of time, it's overnight.
Correct. And we had evidence that he was there late in the evening. And we had evidence that his vehicle was there overnight.
9 p.m., right?
I'm sorry?
9 p.m.
I think it was 9 or 9:30 on one occasion that was there, but law enforcement had also indicated that they saw his vehicle there overnight on several occasions.
It was a block away, right?
I'm sorry?
Weren't these two homes about a block away? Or
one's an apartment complex, and 305 is...
They're walking distance.
They are walking distance, Your Honor, yes. But again, when Chief Mannion was in the apartment, he saw no evidence of any bedding. He saw no evidence that of couches.
But I guess I'm just saying that seeing somebody present at 9 p.m. to me is not conclusive evidence that they're staying overnight there. That's before most people's bedtime.
Sure. That was one night. And that's all we're suggesting is that there's one piece of the puzzle that a jury could have led a jury to conclude. But again, the fact that there was no bedding, no couches, no anything, and I think we best can conclude by that, not only by Chief Midian's own testimony to that, but by the fact that the defendant did not take any photographs of that when he was trying to take photographs to document that he was still living in the apartment. He took photographs of his freezer for some reason. He took a photograph of a tanning bed, I believe, and he took a photograph of a newspaper showing the date. But if you're being alleged that you're not living there, where's, you know, the cabinet, your kitchen, or not your kitchen, your bathroom cabinet showing your toiletries? Where is, again, a couch, a TV? Where's your showing that you live, the kitchen, showing that you're living there? He didn't put any of those things in there. And so the theory that he was still residing there, we believe he wasn't, and that he had failed to register. But a jury could certainly have said, fine, you testified that you're still living there, we'll give you a credence, but you still were over at the other house, at the house an awful lot of time. You didn't have the toiletries, you didn't have a bedding, you didn't have the other things to stay overnight, so then you must have been staying overnight at the other place based on circumstantial evidence. And also your neighbor didn't hear anybody across the hall for 2 weeks. I mean, yes, you're not going to hear a neighbor maybe every day, but over a 2-week period of time, I would submit that that would be direct evidence that the person's not, or strong circumstantial evidence that the person is no longer there. I believe that's all I had for your honors. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. Any rebuttal?
Just briefly, Your Honor, I would like to address this exhibit number four. As I believe you pointed out, there is no begin date listed for the current primary address. So I don't think that exhibit four is proof positive that Mr. Bazoff moved on August 18th. He does list his apartment as a current secondary address and does have a begin date there. But I think it's a reasonable interpretation if he's still staying there that that's a begin date is the date is that date if he's
well if yeah. It's your secondary address, it's not your primary address, correct?
That's correct.
And it was his primary address prior to the move.
That's correct. All I'm suggesting is that the form is not as clear as it could be, and the fact that he put a start date of that date does not mean that that's the date that he moved.
Okay, thank you for that clarification. Did you have anything further on that exhibit?
No, Your Honor.
Because I wanted to go back to the complaint. Did you have a question about?
Go ahead.
So back to the language of the complaint, where it says between August 1, 2016, and August 18, 2016, James Robert Bazoff changed his primary address. So that doesn't give a specific date. It just says in this time period. So, but I thought your argument was that the two were legally inconsistent because count one covered the entire time period and count two covered the entire time period. But respondent argues that it's that they weren't identifying a specific date, but that the change happened during that time period, so it's legally consistent to have a primary address and a secondary address both within that time period because it's a change on a date in that time period, not that it occurred over that whole time period. Does that make sense? I'm sorry.
I understand your question, I think. But the problem is that we just don't know. We don't know what the jury decided in this case. So while it is possible that they could have thought on August 1st it was his secondary address and on August 2nd it was his primary address, we just don't know what the jury found. What we do know is that for this same block of dates, the jury is making a finding that it's both his primary and a secondary address.
Well, what we know is that at some point during that block, during that time period, right? We know the jury found that at some point during that time period he changed his primary address to the house, and at some point the jury found at some point during that time period he obtained a secondary address of the house.
That's correct. And because we don't know what date, we don't know what the jury found. It could have been that the jury found that for the entire time, the August 1st through 18th, Mr. Bazoff was in the house and it was his primary address, and also that it was his secondary address.
But unless we know it was, well, okay, I see your argument. Do you have any case law to support your position? That's factually similar, I guess.
No, there's no factually similar cases. Most of the cases involving inconsistent verdicts deal with mens rea issues and whether mens mm-hmm. rea are incompatible or inconsistent. But importantly, the state doesn't cite any authority to suggest that we can mine the record to determine maybe what the jury might have done. The way to deal with that, if we're not sure about the dates, would be to ask for special interrogatories or to charge different dates in the complaint, and the state didn't do that here. Thank you.
If we know for a fact that he moved from the apartment to the home on August 18, would he be guilty on count two?
That's a good question. No, I don't know that he would be guilty of count two because it wouldn't have been a secondary address then. It would have been a
If he moved on August 18th, couldn't he be guilty of count two if he was staying frequently overnight at the home?
if the complaint had reflected those dates, then possibly yes.
Does the law about registration of a secondary address, does it require 5 days advance?
I don't believe it does, Your Honor. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
All right, thank you for your arguments. The matter was well briefed and well argued. It's an interesting case, and we will look closely at it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, doesn't seem like much.